What's up, everybody? Welcome to the NCAA show brought to you by 265 Media. I am Daniel Artes, the founder of 265 Media. Today, I got a dope panelist with me, man. We're going to get into this NCAA tournament stuff. I got from 265 Media, I got KDOT, Kevin Lewis. Also from 265 Media, Wayne Cole, Will Lyons. I got John Cunningham, a.k.a. JC. And I also got Lawrence Goggins III. And last but not least, I got a special contributor who's joining me for this March Madness, Asher Lowe. What's up, everybody? How y'all doing, man? What's going on?
Chilling, man. Chilling. Chilling, man.
I'm gonna say, if y'all good, I'm good.
Sure. Feeling good. Feeling good.
Y'all yeah. Great.
All good, brother.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. So we're just going to jump right into it real quick. You know, hey, the NCAA is here. You know what I mean? And it's that time of the year again. We didn't have one last year, you know, due to COVID. So now we back. And, like, you know, how y'all feeling about the NCAA tournament coming back?
I'll go ahead and get started. I mean, I'm excited. You know, me being a big NCAA fan, me being a big Cuse fan. I know we snuck in this year. I know it was a lot of talk about Cuse getting in at 11, but hey, it's all good. But yeah, man, I'm excited. I'm interested to see, you know, how this bubble setting is going to work. As of right now, out of the 9,100 guys that are going to be competing, I think there were about 8 or 9 cases that were found. So, I mean, if you look at the odds there, look at the percentages there, that's pretty solid. But still, you know, we need to be mindful of those who has it. So, but yeah, I'm excited. It's bringing a lot of buzz. I'm getting a lot of notifications for brackets. So, you know, definitely an exciting thing. What do you guys think?
This is like Christmas for me, because this is where people's stories are written right here. That's a lot of Steph Curry. That's the main one I can, you know, off the top of my head. It's many, but it's something special about this time, and especially for those lower seeds, the Cinderellas, you know, the guys that are overlooked, the guys that are slept on. So this is a stage where the smallest can shine, and that's why I love the NCAA tournament. So I'm always looking for those underdogs, those high seeds. Shout out to UMBC. Just looking for, again, this is everybody 0-0 now. You know, it's time to hoop. So that's why I love this.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And I want to get Asher's opinion, you know, Asher's thoughts on the NCAA tournament, you know, being that he's new, you know, I mean, to 265, helping us with the March Madness and everything. So, Asher, what's going on with you, man? What's your thoughts on this March Madness being back after a whole year off?
So for me, it's really personal, because last year I was getting ready to go. I was about 3 days away from going to Wisconsin's first game. I cover the Badgers, and I was a senior at Wisconsin. It was my last time as a student going to cover as a student journalist. I was going to call the games. You don't know what site you end up at till like 3 days before. So I didn't know where I was going. I hadn't booked a ticket yet, but I was about to go call these games. And then it gets just taken away from all our seniors, from the entire program, from every program around the state, not just Wisconsin, right? There are so many stories of guys. Obi Toppin, a guy that was going to make a deep run, in my opinion, with Dayton, had it just taken away from him after a crazy year. So guys like that are the guys I felt for. Sam Merrill at Utah State is a rookie on the Bucks. I remember I watched him make a game winner against San Diego State to send his team to the tournament. And 2 days later, everything was crashing down. He never played another college game. So I feel like just having this back for the seniors this time around, a chance for them. And yeah, it's not the same. The bubble's been weird. I know there's been complaints already from certain guys about certain things going on in the bubble. And the women's bubble, by the way, even bigger issues there. We can get into that later. But yeah, it's not perfect. Yeah, it's different. But at least these seniors get one more chance for their, as everyone says in March Madness, for their one shining moment.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. So let's get right to it, man. For the first time since 1976, the NCAA tournament will not include either Duke or the Kentucky Wildcats, man. Like, so what happened? Like, KDOT, what happened? Why aren't Duke and Kentucky playing in this NCAA tournament?
I mean, just for me, just looking at the dynamics of recruiting, and I think there's just a little bit more parity in the NCAAs. With Duke having niche recruiting, I know they had a few, you know, 5 stars come in, and same thing with Kentucky. I think the camaraderie, and also with the COVID protocols, with less practices, they could, you know, Calipari and Krzyzewski just couldn't, you know, get their team to gel, you know, with everything that goes on with the college recruiting process. We know that some of these freshmen, they come in the summertime. So, you know, they didn't get that much time to gel. They didn't get that much time to get all of their, you know, eggs in one basket. And unfortunately, you know, they just had to, you know, just go with it. And it just backfired. And for those two programs to be storied programs, we're talking about the blue blood of the blue bloods. For them to struggle the way they did, I mean, even going with Duke, Jalen Johnson ended up, you know, dismissing himself from the team, you know, during the season. So it was definitely something that was strange this year, but COVID was definitely a factor behind it. And that's why you don't see Duke and Kentucky in it. I mean, we saw Kentucky this year. I mean, they had some games where you thought they were going to, you know, right the ship and turn the table. And then you just had games where it was like, oh my God, like, is this really Kentucky? Is this really a Calipari coach team? You know, so, but like I said, due to, you know, the current structure of what we were going through right now with the whole COVID situation, I think that's the actual reason why we don't see Duke and Kentucky into the tournament. And one thing about Duke, I'll say this last thing, Duke was getting there. Duke was killing in the ACC tournament. And then just like that, they had a COVID case and they had to end their season. So who knows what would have happened if Duke would have stayed in the ACC tournament. They might have would have won, and they really could have been in that field. But unfortunately, again, that almighty COVID just happened to bite them.
All right, go ahead, Wayne.
Yeah, I just think it felt like, you know, the down years, if the Celtics or Lakers aren't good, it's like when you sustain excellence, you kind of, you miss it. And it felt weird not seeing Duke and Kentucky having their names called in this tournament. You know, a Calipari-led team and a Krzyzewski-led team is almost like a given. And it just went along with this whole year of college basketball. Everything just felt weird about it. And what makes it weirder is we don't have Duke or Kentucky. So I'm still coming to reality with that. I don't even think it really hit me because I'm filling up my bracket and I'm like, where's Duke? You know, where's Calipari at? So it's just been an adjustment. And yeah, just hard to put in words without seeing those two teams.
Yeah, I agree. Go ahead, Asher.
Kentucky was a weird one this year. Daniel, a really weird one, because I think that what Kevin was saying is totally true, especially with one and dones. When you have one and dones, you need as much practice time as possible, right? Those guys have never played with each other, never played college basketball in general. And yeah, all the talent in the world is great, but that talent has to mesh and you need time to do that. I mean, there's no replacement for all that practice time they lost. So I think that was a big factor. But with them also, Calipari in some ways, and I don't want to sound crazy saying this, in some ways he wasn't trying to win games. And here's what I mean by that. He was really trying, and he had guys on the bench. Dante Allen is a good example of a guy he brought in later in the year who ended up being one of the leading scorers when he played, but wasn't playing for the first few months of the year. And if you're wondering why he wasn't playing, he wanted to just give a guy like BJ Boston the time to make mistakes, right? Like, he knew it was in, and it's not a bad thing. It's just a different way to approach it, right? Like, it's in Boston's best interest to make the mistakes, get better from them, and head to the NBA pretty soon. Probably won't come back to Kentucky. I think he's definitely going to the NBA draft, and he didn't have a great year, but he got the PT. He got the opportunity under Cal, even if maybe early in the year, that wasn't the best option for Kentucky to win basketball games. So it was just a weird year overall for Cal. He didn't have supreme talent to a lot of other teams in the SEC. And with that talent, they were mostly true freshmen, as they always are. And when they're stepping onto campus day one with COVID, it's a little different.
Yeah, I just wanted to say, I think I pretty much agree with Asher, and especially with the Kentucky situation with the one and done players. You get guys like that, the, you know, top echelon talent. And if you notice over the past couple of years, it's spread out a little bit more over the SEC. Auburn's gotten some of those top recruits. Alabama has gotten a few recruits, a few of the other teams. So Kentucky hasn't gotten that top cream of the crop. They get a few, maybe a couple four-star players, but still gelling them along with those upperclassmen that you already have with fewer practice reps, it's a hard thing to do. Duke is a tough situation. You know, given the guys that backed out, even, you know, a Jalen Johnson in the middle of the season, it's tough. And then right in the middle of a run at the ACC tournament, they end up having a COVID situation and having to bow out for the season. So it was a tough year for both teams, I would say.
Yeah, it's definitely a tough out for Duke and Kentucky. Like, they, you know, them just being, you know, staples in the NCAA tournament. You know what I mean? Like I said, this hasn't happened since 1976. And another thing that hasn't happened since 1976 that I want to talk about, man, you know, just looking at their road to the championship, you know, Gonzaga, they have some potential obstacles in their way. You know, they have a potential rematch with the defending champs, you know, the University of Virginia. And yes, Gonzaga did blow them out in December. But as we all know, March Madness is a different animal. You know what I mean? Also, I want to bring up, you know, USC, who has the length advantage at every position. You know, they're also one of the best defensive teams in the country, especially at protecting the rim. And let's not forget teams in the other brackets that the Zags can meet, you know, later on in the tournament, like a Final Four or a championship game, like teams like Alabama, another team like Baylor. So, Asher, starting with you, what does Gonzaga have to do to become the eighth team and the first team since 1976 to run the table, to win the NCAA tournament undefeated?
This Gonzaga team, Daniel, is the best college basketball team I've seen in 10 years of watching it closely myself. And there were other amazing teams, so I think it's crazy and very hot take-ish to say they're the best of all time. Like that, I'm not going to do that because I haven't watched right in depth enough of history, of college basketball history. But this team is the best offensive college basketball team I think I'll probably ever see for a long, long time. You have the three maybe best offensive, just true offensive talents in college basketball. I'd throw Luka Garza at Iowa in there as well. But with Jalen Suggs, Corey Kispert, and Drew Timmy on the court at the same time, there is no team in the country that when they're on offensively, they can guard those guys. If I have two issues with Gonzaga, and I have very few issues with this team's going to win the NCAA championship, in my opinion. And I've said that since November. Before the year started, this team was my NCAA champion. And now they're even more of my NCAA champion because that offense is so good. And because even with those three guys, they don't like two of those guys could struggle and they'd still have better offensive options than most teams in the country. Andrew Nembhard, a Florida transfer, has really come on with his distance shooting, with his three-point ability, with his playmaking ability. He's a totally different player than he was 2 years ago. Their bench is overall solid. And Joel Ayayi, a guy that we almost never talk about with that team, is a senior leader, a guy that's been there for a few years. But if I have two issues, two things to watch with them that could bite them, number one, It's not that they played bad teams, right? We talk about the West Coast Conference and everyone always wonders about, oh, they played bad teams, whatever. The one thing that was worrisome to me about those games is that there were games against lesser teams that they started down like 10-2 or was 15-6, right? And it didn't really matter because they could turn it on like that. Boom, game's tied again in about 2 minutes. They go on one of those Zag-like 10-0 runs that you're going to see on Saturday. I guarantee you're going to see like a 15-0, 20-0 run against that 16 seed they're playing. But if you're playing a USC, right, in the Sweet 16, if you're playing a Michigan in the Final Four, a Texas in the Final Four, and you start down 10-2, that's a little bit different. So those early starts, getting up for that first 4 or 5 minutes was an issue to me. The second thing being the transition defense. In some ways, that transition defense was an issue for both them and for Iowa, who they might meet in the Elite Eight. So both those teams kind of have the same big issue. But their defense allowing just easy layups and transition off of missed threes was something I was watching for. Definitely watch for those two things come March, but they should win the NCAA championship. This is the best offensive team in the country, and it's not even close. Mm.
Yeah, just to add on to that, DA, I'm going to just give you some context. Let's look at the beginning of the season with Gonzaga, and let's see the scores. You have the very first game versus Kansas, 102-90. Against Auburn, 90-67. Against West Virginia, 87-82. And then against Iowa, 99-88. So just like Asher said, they might see Iowa again in the Elite Eight. But at the same time, if you look at this high-powered offense and what Mark Few was able to do with the talent that he has around him, to Asher's point, you know, they have the pedigree to go against these other Power Five conferences, even though they play in the Western Coast Conference. But at the same time, you know, with them having that firepower, you look at some of these scores off the opponent, you know, they're allowing those 90 points. They're allowing 88 points, you know, things like that. And that's going to be the concerning thing. Are they going to use just their offensive abilities just to try to outscore you? Or is there going to be a case where they find some type of defense and be able to stop some of these teams? Just like Asher said, you know, are they going to be able to stop a Michigan if they are, if they're down 10-2? Are they going to be able to stop, you know, maybe a Texas Tech, you know, or some of those teams? So that's going to be the biggest concern, but I'm not concerned too much about the talent and offensive mindset that Gonzaga has, because I mean, they've proven it early in the season, and they're definitely going to show it in this tournament. So I just wanted to add that on.
Oh, you on mute, brother?
I'll keep it short and sweet. My grandmother's a big Gonzaga fan. We have Rui Hachimura. They just pull out guys that are fundamentally sound, never flashy, never the oohs and the ahs. It's just, you know, those pale pad, lunch pad guys. They just get to work. So K-Dot with the stats there, that was good. I have them in my Final Four, but not winning at all. So they're always, again, if Gonzaga wasn't in the tournament, I'd be like, whoa. So they've sustained the excellence that has been for a while, but they always slip up somewhere. So I got him in my Final Four, but that's as far as I got him going. But again, okay, to Ash's point, they may shock me, but that's what I had in my bracket.
No problem at all. And back to Asher, man. You know, we have teams, you know, like San Diego State, who hasn't lost, you know, since mid-January. The University of Houston, who also won, you know, 9 of their last 10 games, you know, leading up to this tournament. And also, let's talk about, like, you know, Georgia Tech as well, who was on a bubble before winning their last 9 games, as well as winning the ACC title. So, Asher, like, who, in your opinion, are the hottest teams to enter the tournament?
I think San Diego State is a fun one to bring up because that team is balanced. Matt Mitchell is one of the better scorers in the country, but it's not just him. First of all, they play in a better conference than people realize. The Mountain West was really good this year. Utah State's an 11 seed, and they could beat Texas Tech, very legitimately beat Texas Tech in the first round. San Diego State with Mitchell, yes, as their leader, but a ton of other guys. Terrell Gomez, you got a guy that can come off the bench and just launch him, right? Like he can have a game in this tournament where he scores 20. I also like the matchup against Syracuse. I don't know who was talking about Cuse a little bit earlier, but I am not sold on the Jim Boeheim-led Syracuse team. They are the 2-3 zone is made to be carved apart by this San Diego State team, Daniel, because when you have like 6 options offensively, which this team does, Nathan Mensah is the only guy that really isn't a give him the ball and go to work kind of offensive option. Everybody else on the court most of the time for San Diego State can get their own bucket. Jordan Shackle, another guy that can get his own bucket on this team. That's pretty rare in college basketball. Usually it's just kind of a few guys, right? In the NBA, that's not rare. That's how it is in every team. But in college basketball, usually most teams kind of have a few guys that can get their own, and everyone else is a bit of a role guy. You're going to do this and that, not much more. San Diego State has a bunch of guys that kind of fit the scorer mold, and that's pretty rare, and they haven't lost in a long time, right? Georgia Tech, they have a big issue. It's called Loyola Chicago. That team has the best big in the country outside of Garza in Cameron Krutwig, the best passing big man in the country, a guy that is a triple-double threat in any game he plays. So, and Sister Jean's magic coming to, she's vaccinated. Sister Jean's rolling through into India. If you're picking against Loyola Chicago in round one with Sister Jean watching, I don't know what you're doing. That's all I got to say about that team. But Cameron Krutwig, definitely keep an eye on him. A lefty, smooth passer, really good finisher, and a better defender than people give him credit for. Also, some other seniors on that team that were a part of the run a few years ago to the Final Four. And Porter Moser, their coach, actually is on record, quote, saying that they are better than that team in 2018 that went to the Final Four. This edition is the best edition he's ever had.
Mm. Go ahead, Lawrence.
Yeah, definitely. I think the Zags are Final Four bound. If they handle business, it's tough to run the whole season undefeated. That's the only other factor that I could really put into it. They beat some of the top teams by double digits. They have, you know, multiple scores. They have guys who are, you know, they have a couple upperclassmen, but they have the younger guys who are poised beyond their years, especially Suggs, who's going to, you know, end up being a top 5 pick. But I have to see him do it. I have to see him prove it in the Final Four and finally get that national title. But overall, I definitely think they have a shot to win it. But it's tough to go that whole season undefeated.
Well, DA, when you're talking about hot teams, I think you can't go without mentioning OK State. I mean, they made a run all the way to their conference championship. You know, they met a very talented Texas team that was able to overtake them. But, you know, when you got that collection of talent and then you throw in Cade, I think they can make things very interesting. And then also, I wouldn't say necessarily hot, but I think USC can make things interesting. Just the athletic ability that that team has with Mobley in the paint. When I look at the brackets, I always look at certain players, and I think he's good enough, you know, depending on the matchup, to win a game, maybe even two by himself. You know, so I think those teams are kind of built to make things incredibly interesting. And I'm also just very intrigued to see what Baylor looks like, man. You know, they're very great as far as, you know, being able to kind of get up in your jersey and make it hard for you to score. And they've got a number of guys, you know, whether it's Davion Mitchell, Jared Butler, that can also score as well. And then we can't forget the mid-majors, man. Jason Preston and Bones Highland, man, those guys are stars and going to make it hell for opposing teams.
Yeah, definitely. And that was my next question. That was my next question, too, I was going to talk about. And I was going to mention that, too, about, you know, Jason Preston and stuff. Because one of the things about March Madness is, you know, the ability to introduce, you know, the casual sports audience to players we never heard of, you know, players like a Jason Preston from the University of Ohio, who has an amazing story, you know, from averaging 2 points per game in his senior year of high school to basically playing his way onto an NBA radar. You know, players like sophomore Max Abrams from Oral Roberts, who's actually leading the country in scoring, you know, as a sophomore. Another unknown player, 6'7" point guard Chandler Vaudrin, who started his career as a Division II player. Now he's always on the triple-double watch. He's averaging 12.7 rebounds and 7 assists for Winthrop. You know, so, Asher, once again, starting with you, who are the other under-the-radar mid-major players that we should look out for?
That's a fun question. I think Cameron Krutwig is the one I mentioned earlier that does not get enough love nationally for just how incredible he is. I'm not sure he's an NBA player, but he is one of the best college players I've ever seen, and he can lead Loyola Chicago a lot farther than some people are picking. Liberty as a team against Oklahoma State in that first round is a lot scarier of a matchup than I think most people are realizing. It's not an upset that's trendy. It's not something people want to. Everyone's kind of talking, you know, okay, Georgetown over Colorado. Yeah, okay, maybe Winthrop over Villanova. They lost Colin Gillespie. Okay, nobody really is talking about Liberty beating Oklahoma State. And they play slow. They play deliberate. They don't mess up, right? They're not going to beat themselves at all. And they have one of the best mid-major players in the country who does not get talked about enough in Darius McGee. So watch out for him. Darius McGee, leading scorer on that Liberty team, a Sun player of the year in that conference. Is he Cade Cunningham? No, he's not. But he is a 6 foot, 5'11", maybe even listed guard that can fill it up and get buckets. Another one of those small guards in mid-major college basketball that you see a lot of, right? They're just pure bucket getters. Yeah. Last guy who's not a mid-major guy that for some reason, this guy is the best high major star that nobody knows about. And I don't know why he's not talked about enough nationally, but McKinley Wright on Colorado could lead them to the Final Four. Like, he's that good. He is a winner. He's one of those guys that, like, use all the buzzwords for, like, he's just a dude that I'd want on my team at the rec, playing pickup. Like, I know he's not going to lose games when it comes down the stretch. I want to give him the basketball and say, get out of the way. You go win me a game. That's what he does in the Pac-12. That's what he's done for 4 years. He's a senior. This is it for him. And I really think that he could have a Magic March run in him. And nobody really talks about him.
Moving on real quick. Like, who's also like the weakest number one ranked, you know, obviously in the brackets. Who's the weakest number one in the brackets?
Well, it's kind of hurting me to say this. So we had two Big Ten teams that went number one, which is Michigan and Illinois. And to me, it sounds crazy, but to me, the weakest number one is Michigan. Even though they have the talent around them, they have a case to make in the Final Four. I just think when you compare them to the other number ones, like your Gonzagas, your Illinois, and I can't remember the last number one. Remind me of it just right quick. I mean, look it up just quick.
Illinois, Baylor,
Gonzaga. Yeah, Baylor. Yeah, Baylor. I mean, when you have teams that you know, that have gone on crazy streaks, and you have those, you know, type star players that can get you to the Final Four, even though I think Michigan has the opportunity to get to the Final Four. I mean, they don't have that IU for Illinois. They don't have that Jalen for Baylor. They don't have that Jalen Suggs for Gonzaga. Mm. You know, they get to you collectively. And, you know, it starts on the defensive end for them, and I understand that. But at the same time, you know, they get vulnerable sometimes. And you saw it in the Big Ten tournament. They got very vulnerable against Ohio State, and Ohio State was able to pull that off in a heartbreak, I know, for Michigan, because they lost by one. But, you know, they were able to, you know, pull that off. So it as strong as the number ones are this year, I have to give it to Michigan.
Mm.
I definitely agree with that. And the reason is not so much as the fact that they play by committee, but the difference maker for them statistically is Livers. When he scores 10 or more, their record was 40-4. And he's out for an extended period of time. So with that right there, I just think that makes them far more vulnerable. You're going to have guys that aren't used to getting as many touches or minutes being put in a position, you know, where they got to really be that X factor.
You know, ironically, they are the weakest number one, but they are my pick to win it all. Because I just want to believe in what Juwan Howard is doing for the specialness of, you know, coming back coaching. He got fired up against Maryland. I picked them because, you know, a little bit of loyalty there, former Baltimore Bullet. I believe in Juwan. And anytime you're ready to go to war for your guys, you know, so catch out the bag, that's my pick.
Mm.
So they may be the weakest, but that's the team I'm rolling with.
That's interesting. That's interesting that you brought up Juwan Howard, because we're going to move on to the coaches and stuff. And KDOT, okay, man, you know, we got to hand out the flowers, KDOT. You know how we do when we were 265 Media, we hand out flowers.
Absolutely. So
We got Juwan Howard and Patrick Ewing, you know what I'm saying? Both coaching at the alma mater, thriving and everything. So, like, let's give them their flowers, man. Let's talk about it. Go ahead. The floor is yours, brother.
Yeah, man. Listen, the emotions that Juwan Howard showed when he came back to Michigan, incredible. The emotion, you know, he did it in less than 5 years. You know, sometimes we give some of these coaches, you know, a short leash. As far as commentating and trying to figure out, you know, what they need to do from a recruiting perspective, you know, from a game plan perspective, but Juwan Howard was able to do it. And, you know, he's a number one seed going into the tournament. So, you know, more power to Juwan. And he's been doing it for a while. He has that NBA pedigree, and he's brought that pedigree back down to the NCAA level. And of course, big ups to Patrick Ewing, the Big East champion. He was able to do the same thing, you know, having that pedigree, you know, from an NBA perspective and bringing it down to the level of the NCAA. He's starting to get there from a recruiting perspective. I know he had a few guys that transferred last year, but at the same time, you know, he goes to war with his guys. And, you know, I just wanted to give him their flowers because, I mean, when you look at it, for two guys to come back to their alma maters and have the major press that they're having coming into this tournament, I mean, it's incredible. You know, the incredible story of how Patrick Ewing got to Georgetown, the incredible story on how Juwan was able to get the Fab Five together in Michigan. I mean, it was a beautiful thing. So for them to come full circle and become the head coaches of their alma maters and actually be successful at their alma maters is a good thing. What do you think, Asher?
Juwan Howard would be my coach of the year in college basketball. But a guy I want to add to this list who I don't feel like is getting the hype that Juwan is getting, that Mark Few is getting at Gonzaga, is Mike Boynton at Oklahoma State. So Cade Cunningham, right? You have the number one pick in the NBA draft. All right, people think you're going to be good. I don't think people realize coming into this year, we weren't thinking Oklahoma State was a great basketball team, was a top five team in the Big 12. The supporting cast for Cade, really, at least in the media, in me, in most college basketball fans' opinions, wasn't there, right? We just thought it'd be Cade. It's like Ben Simmons at LSU, right? Like a few years back, if you go back to that team where it's Ben doing everything, they don't even make the tournament, and that's that. But Mike Boynton in year four at Oklahoma State now, at his first head coaching job, by the way, that's a rare thing in college basketball for a guy to get their first head job at a place like Oklahoma State. Usually it's kind of you go low and then you move up. But at his first job, he has put together a cast of guys like Caleb Boone and Isaac Likely who have their weaknesses, like have serious weaknesses, but he has masked it with fantastic leadership, coaching, giving Cade the keys to the car and empowering Cade to be the best version of himself this year. And also having that supporting cast play better than I could have ever imagined. He was within about two possessions of winning the Big 12 championship in the second best conference in college basketball on a team that I didn't even think was a tournament team.
Yeah, I agree. He got South Carolina roots too. So big up. Yeah, big ups to that for sure.
Oh, yeah, you said Mike Boynton got South Carolina roots, right?
Yes, indeed. Yes, indeed.
Sir. Yes, sir. Me and Mike Boynton, we played AAU together, man. I was on my first AAU team, Riverside Church in New York City. Me and Mike Boynton go back since we was like 9 years old, man. You know what I'm saying? So it's really dope to see him, you know, getting at this level of the game, you know, as successful as he is. And how he coaches, how he was as a point guard too. You know what I'm saying? Just very heady, making good decisions and everything, holding people accountable, you know, just always being that leader and stuff. So, you know, it was actually really cool to see him. And also on that AAU team with us was Omar Cook too as well. You know what I mean? Who Mike Boynton, you know, pretty much studied under, you know what I'm saying? So like, you can see it right there, man, New York City in the building right there by, you know, South Carolina as well, where me and, you know, KDOT is currently residing at right now in this beautiful state, the Palmetto State of South Carolina. But all right, let's keep it moving. Let's talk about the mid-majors right now, okay? So we'll start with Asher. Like, who is the Cinderella this year? We got teams like Loyola Chicago. We got Iona, you know what I mean? Another New York team, Ohio with the young Jason Preston, and, you know, Winthrop. So, like, who is going to be the furthest? Who's going to go the furthest this year as that Cinderella team?
I'd be guessing if I was telling you who I knew would go the furthest, but I'll give you a few that I think can make Sweet 16 second weekend runs. One is UC Santa Barbara, and I'm glad we're coming back to this topic because Ja'Cory McLaughlin is a guy I should have mentioned when you asked me a couple minutes ago about mid-major studs to watch. He is a do-it-all guard, over 16 points a game, 6 boards, 7 assists, just that guy that kind of runs the show. Not a typical mid-major guard. He's not undersized. He's not a scorer. He just kind of is a do-it-all type of guard, right? He can score when you need him to score. He can dish when you need him to dish. He's good at it all. And he's led a UC Santa Barbara team through a better conference once again than I think people realize, the Big West, a conference with some legitimate teams in UC Irvine, who made a run a couple years ago, if you remember. So the Big West has some good tournament history for that team that wins the conference. I really like them and their path, by the way, because they're playing a Creighton team that is down in the dumps right now from where they were a couple months ago. That second round game, I also like them getting past the winner of Virginia or Ohio. Virginia is going to have some serious issues, which will open the door for Javon Preston because they're not practicing until Friday. They play a game on Saturday. I don't know about you, but that screams upset to me, especially with a dude like Javon Preston. We've already talked about him. But a third team I would add after UCSB and Ohio, who, by the way, would play each other in the second round if they both win, which I do have in my bracket, and that'd be awesome. The third team I'd add is Utah State, who I don't think people are really talking about, thinking about. San Diego State, by the way, I think will make a deep run, but they're a bit better than these other three teams just coming in. Utah State has the best big that nobody talks about, Nemish Keita, who has stepped up his offensive game. He could always protect the rim. He was always just a freak of nature physically, but his touch around the rim, his footwork, has really improved in a couple years. They have a coach in Craig Smith who is returning a lot of the guys from last year's team that won the Mountain West that were going to go to the NCAA tournament if it were to happen, minus Sam Merrill, who's the Milwaukee Bucks rookie right now. So they have that core coming back. They know each other well. They have beaten San Diego State twice out of three times this year, by the way. They're a legitimate force defensively, and they have Keita inside.
And Keita, that's the kid, the shot block, I think he's averaging about 14 points, 10 rebounds, and about 3-4 blocks a game, something like that. Really athletic kid. Definitely see him, you know, having a nice professional career too, as well, after college is up for him. I actually like his game and stuff. So as far as the let's talk about the 12-5 matchup, the fun matchup. You know what I'm saying? We got Creighton versus UC Santa Barbara. We have Villanova versus Winthrop. We have Tennessee versus Oregon State. And we have Georgetown versus Colorado. So out of those four 12 versus 5 matchups, which upset is going to happen?
Go ahead, Asher. I want to know your why, but I think I'm going to be biased on this one. I think DA know where I'm going with this one.
So I really like Kudus Wahab. I like a couple of their other pieces. The issue to me is guard play for Georgetown has been up and down all year and consistent at best. And Colorado has the best player on the floor in McKinley Wright, who is a guard, and that's how you win March Madness games. But they also have a guy named Deshaun Schwartz, a lefty who can just stroke it. They have size, which against Georgetown, you need size, right? Like, you need to have some solid size against a guy like Wahab, but they have it. They check all those boxes. McKinley Wright is not going to let this team lose in his senior season in the first round. It just isn't happening.
Mm. Go ahead, K-Dot.
Wow. I'm just biased. My 12-5 matchup is the Winthrop Villanova. That's my upset. I mean, let's face it. We got a guy, DJ Burns, who's a killer down in the post. And you also got to understand that we're in a COVID era. So Villanova has been depleted pretty much coming into the Big East tourney. They ended up losing to Georgetown, of course. Of course, it was by one, but you know, they don't have their, you know, their go-to players as much as you think they would coming into the tourney. So with Winthrop coming in, Winthrop is a really good team, real hot team. And like I said, you got DJ Burns down there, you know, on the block, and with the other guys coming out. And you got to look out for my guy, you know, Russ, who's out there, number zero, playing for Winthrop. He's a killer as well. So I really think that Winthrop can finally make noise and go into the round of 32. I know they've always been kind of like that first round exit every time they've made the tourney, but I think this is the year that they hit their mark, and they're a 12 seed. So you already know how that 12-5 matchup can go. So I'm picking Winthrop as one of the upsets.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I would be honest, man, with Colin Gillespie out, I don't even view it as much as an upset, man. Like, I think Villanova is incredibly vulnerable with that injury. He was the heart and soul of their team and their best player. So I think Winthrop is going to win in G-Town.
You know what? Like, when I look at these teams like this, these 5-12 teams, I always, like, you know, judge by the conference. Sometimes, you know, yeah, they may be a 12 seed, you know, in the NCAA tournament, but you know, their conference, they're actually really strong in their conference. You know what I'm saying? So like, I can see Oregon State, you know, giving Tennessee a scare. Well, I guess as everybody's calling Winthrop and Villanova and stuff, I'll go with Oregon State, man. I'll roll with them. You know what I'm saying? I'm gonna roll with Oregon State, man. They're in my bracket, which we will talk about later and stuff like that. So moving on. Will this be the weirdest Final Four we ever seen? Because you got to understand too, as well, this entire tournament will be taking place in the great city of Indianapolis, my second home. You know, from Assembly Hall, where Indiana University plays, from Hinkle Fieldhouse, where the University of Butler is at, also where Indiana Pace is at Bankers Life Fieldhouse, and as well as Lucas Oil Stadium. Not that many fans. You know what I'm saying? You know, the fan support in the NCAA tournament is paramount. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, we get to see a lot of things, a lot of game-winning shots, just a lot of drama and everything. And the fans, you know, they go crazy and everything about that. But with the fans being limited to 25% in these arenas, man, like, I feel like anything can happen. Like, you know, some of these players might not have the energy to get up or whatever for a game, and you know what I'm saying, or whatever. Like, this could be one of those Final Fours where – it could be a lot of upsets, or it'll just go chalk with you know, all the Final Four will be all number one seeds. What you thinking, Asher?
I think nothing would surprise me at all because of all those things you just said, except Gonzaga losing. Anything else wouldn't surprise me in this tournament. I think every other team has huge flaws that we've seen at times. Illinois maybe has the least, but even them in the middle of the year were not the team they are now. So if they revert back to some of those turnovers they were having issues with, some of those defensive miscues they were having in the half court. That could be an issue, but anything besides Gonzaga losing would not surprise me.
Interesting. Go ahead, K-Dot.
Yeah, this could possibly be one of the weirdest tournaments we've seen. But it's, I mean, that's all to say how exciting it's going to be as well. I mean, I want to see another shot at Loyola Chicago, you know, possibly making that Final Four run. So, I mean, one thing about the tournament this year is, just as you said, everything is going to be played in the state of Indiana. So, you know, between all of the areas that they're going to be in, you know, you got to monitor, you know, travel, you got to monitor the whole COVID protocol, who's going to be in, who's going to be out, you know, who's going to end up catching cases. So I could probably agree with Asher as well. If Gonzaga loses, it will be, you know, one of those shockers, but everybody else is fair game. And we've already talked about possible upsets. I mean, we got possibly 3-12-5 upsets. I mean, that was almost unheard of. We all know that there was going to be a 12-5 upset, but we have potentially three of them. So, you know, I think that's already weird in itself. So I do think it's going to be one of the weirdest tournaments we see, but it's going to be exciting at the same time.
Okay. You know what else is going to be weird? And this is our last thought we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about the first four real fast. You know what I'm saying? Everybody thinks that the March Madness tournament starts on the 20th. No, the tournament starts tonight on March 18th. That's when this tournament is starting. And with the first four, we got the number 16 teams, Norfolk State versus Appalachian State, the number 11 seeds, Wichita State versus Drake. On the east side of the bracket, we got Mount St. Mary's as a 16 seed versus Texas Southern, and Michigan State versus UCLA, which actually can be an upset in the 11-6 game too as well, which if one of those two teams move on, you know what I'm saying? So I think that that's very important to look at too as well. So like, what's your thoughts about the first four, starting with Asher? Go ahead.
So obviously the game, I think, of the first four, everyone agrees, is Michigan State, UCLA. That one has a lot of interesting factors. And I think both teams can test BYU and maybe even beat BYU if they get past that game. So I'm looking at that one. Aaron Henry has been a do-it-all guy that's just kind of willed Michigan State to the NCAA tournament this year. They had no business being in this tournament about a month and a half ago.
Yes.
They were gone. But Tom Izzo and Aaron Henry have willed this team to the tourney. UCLA is an interesting story because Chris Smith, who was their best player last year, is out for the year. Jalen Hill left the team, and we don't exactly know why, but dealing with some personal stuff. So he left the team. And without those two guys, it's a whole different look. But I'm very biased here, Daniel. I'm really biased because I played with Johnny Juzang. I played with David Singleton. I played with against Jules Bernard. Got killed by him more than a few times. And so I am always biased to the West Coast guys that I grew up with.
Yeah.
And Johnny, I think, is the best player on the court in this game. And he has to be for UCLA to win it. Yes, he's better than Aaron Henry. That's going to be a really fun duel to watch with those two. So keep an eye on Juzang versus Henry tonight. But could go either way. Tiger Campbell, also a guy that could swing the table here. I think UCLA overall has just more scoring options than a Michigan State team that's really just relied on Henry so much and struggles so much from the perimeter. So we'll see. It'll be that'll be a fun one.
Go ahead, Gator.
Yeah, no, I agree. I also have, I mean, Michigan State is a team that I really love, but I just think that UCLA has a little bit more firepower than the Michigan State has. We're in a tight game right now between Mount St. Mary's and Texas Southern, 31-30. Texas Southern is up with about 15 minutes left to go in the second half. But a team that I would like to look at is that Drake-Wichita State matchup. I do enjoy I enjoyed watching Drake this year. Drake had one of those improbable runs this year. I'm looking at Drake to defeat Wichita State. So even with the situation that happened, you know, in the beginning of the season with Wichita State, I just don't think, you know, coming into the tournament with Drake being as grinding as they've been all season, I think they really want this. So I'm gonna take Drake in that matchup. But you know, the first four is going to be really exciting, and like I said, it's already starting off good with that Mount St. Mary's and Texas Southern matchup right now.
All right, cool, man. Cool. Well, that will be the end of the NCAA show brought to you by 265 Media. Please make sure that y'all just, you know, support the podcast and just, you know, go get it wherever you consume your podcast content from. Also, before I bounce, I just want to let everybody know that 265 Media is having a bracket challenge on the ESPN bracket. All you got to do is just go to ESPN.com, go to the, you know, wherever you could find the bracket thing at, and then just type in 265 Media. You will see that we are in there. I am giving away two t-shirts, you know what I'm saying, to the winners. That's including everybody even involved in this podcast right here. If you win, you get two free t-shirts, you know what I mean, via the Daniel Artes podcast, 265 Media podcast network and stuff. So, but with that being said, for Will, for K-Dot, for Wayne, for JC, for Lawrence, and for Asher, thank you for coming in here, man, and joining us. I'm Daniel Artes. That is the end of the NCAA show with 265 Media. Love is love. Peace.